So many of our problems in society get back to the breakdown of the family, and specifically the breakdown of the family often begins with the breakdown of marriage. And now comes a new book by a Grove City College professor named Dr. David Ayers. The new book is called Christian Marriage, A Comprehensive Introduction. And it's really quite a thorough book. It's been recommended by a lot of people, and even I had the privilege to be one of those who recommended it. It's published by Lexham Press, lexhampress.com. Dr. Ayers, great to have you on the program. By the way, this is Vocal Point, and I'm Jerry Newcomb. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a real honor.
Sure. Okay, so first of all, tell us about this book itself. What is the genesis of it?
Well, you know, I've been teaching marriage and family classes for over 30 years and researching it for longer than that, and engaging it as a social scientist, as somebody very interested in social history, also as somebody interested in Christian doctrine, scripture, theology, and really trying to kind of harmoniously blend all those things. And I have not seen a book out there that really brings all those things together. And I also have seen social science handled and often mishandled by Christians dealing with the data, but I pretty much have a really strong handle on a lot of the basic data that's out there on this.
Okay, wait.
So that's really where it came from.
All right, let me just stop you right there. Sorry for so rudely interrupting, but when you mentioned data, I get sick of it when I hear one out of two marriages in America end in divorce. It's my understanding that's not totally accurate. What are your thoughts?
Well, there's some bad information on both sides. First of all, for particular cohorts of married couples, in other words, married couples born within a particular time frame, it certainly did reach 50%. And that's based on basically about four out of 10 of those married couples had gotten divorced by their 10th to 15th year of the marriage, and then it's reasonable to expect that another 10% will get divorced before they all die. And that's a very accurate number, actually. It's decreased since then, more to the, I guess it would now be better to say 40 to 50% range, depending on the demographic group that you're talking about. But claims that the rate is really down in the 20% range or really down in the 25% range are not accurate. They're not accurate.
Okay, so wait. When you said the age range, what's the age range where it's about 50% divorce rate?
Those would be people that got married in the 1970s and 80s.
Oh, well, I was married in 1980. And I've been married almost 39 years, and we're not getting divorced.
That's exactly right. So welcome to the 50% that did better.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, why has marriage taken such a beating in our time?
Well, there's a complex answer to that. I think the underlying villain of the whole thing, and that's what I try to address in my book, is to really understand what marriage is and what its purposes are, and to understand marriage as an institution that we enter. It's a covenant that we enter, that in order for it to deliver its rewards for us as individuals and for society as a whole, in order for it to deliver its rewards, it has to be able to make demands on us, and we have to be able to honor those demands. And when we began thinking of marriage as a contract, as based on basically individual fulfillment relationship, what's oftentimes called a therapeutic or an individualistic approach to marriage, is that marriage is basically to make me happy. It's to fulfill me. It's to self-actualize me. And once you've done that, you're basically stepping into a realm where you're going to want to be able to get out of it when in your mind it's no longer delivering the goods. Mm. The problem is then you're going to leave that marriage, probably enter another marriage, and you're going to be right back where you started from eventually. Mm-hmm. Because at some point you have to be able to weather adversity and weather those times where your marriage is difficult. And unless you really understand that it's an institution that's made grave demands upon you, which you have vowed to maintain, it's really hard to stick it out through those times.
What is marriage?
Marriage is it's a creational ordinance. It's something that God created before the fall. although he anticipated the fall in its creation, and it's a bulwark against the fall. It's a sexual relationship, meaning it's consummated through sexual intercourse between one man and one woman who've committed themselves to be married for life and affirm that commitment before witnesses, including God as their witness. And in the process, they've placed themselves under the implicit and explicit demands, and but also enjoying the rights that marriage has to offer. I think that's a pretty good thumbnail. It's also a relationship that you enter into voluntarily, and something that in the modern world, I guess, we would call informed consent. It's not enacted in fraud, and it's not enacted through force, or else it really would not be binding.
I noticed in the index you have, and it's a very thorough index, by the way, there's lots of references to the Puritans. How did the Puritans do when it comes to marriage, say, in contrast to today's age, and what's the difference?
Well, the Puritans, first of all, were part of a reformational understanding that brought marriage back as not only a social good, but that sex in and of itself was a legitimate, was something legitimate for people to desire and want, that marriage was not somehow a concession to the flesh, that sex was not somehow a concession to the flesh. And so they actually elevated marriage to a very high position in their thinking, while at the same time saying marriage is not a sacrament. It's holy. It's something that's enacted before God, but it's not a sacrament of the church. And so they fundamentally realigned our understanding of marriage to something that's much more them and the other reformers into something that's much more what we understand it to be now. They believed that it ought to be marked by love that can develop and last a lifetime, in which the people are suitable mutual helpers to each other. And so that the marriage selection process and a marriage formation process should encourage the development of a voluntary relationship between two people who are able to love each other for life. And they thought that through in a very intentional way. So secret marriages, arranged marriages, forced marriages, these kinds of things, they didn't really want to be part of it. So they created a lot of our modern understanding of marriage, whereby, you know, you basically do have this courtship process, which involves the being guided by wise and older individuals. But ultimately, what was one of the great Puritans, Henry Smith, said, a man must choose the woman he loves and then love the woman he chose.
Mm-hmm.
And that would really summarize the Puritan understanding of marriage, that on the one hand, you really love this person and you're making a voluntary choice to enter into this relationship. On the other hand, once you've done it, there are no exit doors except under very grave circumstances. And then that love is an action. It's a duty. It's a commitment. It's something that you have to actively foster.
Mm. You know, this is so interesting because I have a thesis, and Dr. Rodney Stark of Baylor.
Rodney Stark, yeah.
Yeah, in one of his books, he upholds my thesis. But here's the thesis. Today, modern Americans view the Puritans as being repressed when it comes to sex. I bet anything that the Puritans generally, you know, on average, had terrific sex lives and did, you know, had much more fulfillment in sex through marriage than Americans have fulfillment in sex, and in our broken relationships in modern America. In other words, the Puritans had great sex, and today we don't. And it's because, you know, we're not following God's way. But what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, first of all, I love Rodney Stark. He's one of my favorite sociologists, and he's willing to challenge a lot of the myths and wrong-headed ideas that are out there, and he's
sure.
always been pretty gutsy in doing that. Leland Ryken's book, The Puritans as They Really Were, deals with that head-on. J.I. Packer, in his book, The Puritans and the Quest for Godliness.
And what are their conclusions?
They support what Rodney Stark says completely.
Yeah.
That in fact, it's even C.S. Lewis pointed, not even C.S. Lewis, but he pointed out in his day, the Puritans were actually thought by the medievalists to be licentious, lusty, you know, embarrassing type of people who were, you know, almost like antinomian. they were, you know, wearing women wearing colorful clothes, trying to be physically attracted to men. Whole sermons on the Song of Solomon, you know, exploring the delights of marital sex. They were very earthy and very upfront about all those things. And in fact, we actually have records from at least one New England church where a man was disciplined for refraining from having, because his wife filed the complaint with the church that he had stopped having sex with her.
Yeah.
And the church put him under discipline and ordered him to have sex with his wife more often. Right. Now, that's not the Puritans that we're taught to believe exist. That's more the Victorian sensibility, not the Puritan sensibility.
Yeah. Well, and maybe even there may be some mistakes or misunderstandings than that. But you write in the book, you use this phrase, the beautiful order of Christian marriage. What does that mean?
Well, one of the analogies I use there is a geode. You know, a geode is that rock that looks like a potato, right? But you go to the mineral store and you buy a geode and they saw it open for you, and inside that it's just beautiful.
Oh.
And sometimes it's spectacularly beautiful. There's crystals inside and striking colors and all that. And that marriage is, on its outside, it's very simple in its structure. It's in one sense kind of plain when you look at it, to, you know, a man and a woman committing before God and their fellow companies to love each other for life and continuing to do that as they get old, as they get saggy, you know, and really day to day just carrying out these mundane types of things. But inside of it, there's a striking beauty, and that's that. I actually pulled the idea of beautiful order from the original meaning of the word cosmos, as it appears in places like the Book of John.
Hmm.
That cosmos is a beautiful order. It's an order that has in it an inherent beauty, because what Paul says is that marriage is a great mystery. It's a reflection of the relationship between Christ and the church. Throughout the Old Testament, God describes himself as a husband to an unfaithful wife, and that he will eventually make her clean and marry her, you know. At the end, Jesus blessed his first miracle was at a wedding ceremony, and
yeah.
In fact, probably a three-day-long wedding party. And at the end of the Bible, we have the marriage supper of the Lamb. We have the bride of Christ presenting himself pure and spotless to an expectant groom. And so the fact is that marriage is explosive in what it reveals about the nature of the Trinity, about the nature of the creation order, about the nature of the Godhead, about the very essence of the gospel. There should be a gospel order in the way that the man and woman relate to each other in marriage, and in that sense, it's strikingly beautiful, and it's beautiful in its effects. It's beautiful in what it does for children, what it does for society, what it does for the world. And so that's, I think there's a basic order there, but it's an order that has real beauty.
All right, we have about a minute and a half left. By the way, the word cosmos, it's my understanding that we derive the word cosmetics from it, which is to beautify someone.
To beautify.
Yeah. So what would you say to those who may be struggling? Let's say they're in a situation where their marriage is unhappy at this particular point. Is it worth making it work and, you know, coming out ahead? We have about a minute left. Go ahead.
Most marriages where the couple sticks it out, and by the way, in most cases, one party is unhappy, the other one is not. Not always. And of course, you may deal with serious abuse, infidelity, other major problems, and there's really not a clean resolution available. But where there is, where it's basically just marital unhappiness, normally, 5 years down the road, when you engage that, when you engage it with people in your church, when you engage it with good counseling and
support, work through it.
You're going to be better. You're going to work through it, and you're going to be happier and better off.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. We do have time for the concluding thought about marriage. And by the way, let me go ahead and give you your Twitter. People can look you up at Twitter at David Ayers. Ayers is spelled A-Y-E-R-S. Again, the name of the book is Christian Marriage. So a concluding thought on marriage in 10 seconds.
Marriage is the foundation of family. Family is the foundation of society. As the family goes so goes the nation. As the marriages go, so goes the family.
Wow, so true. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
Sure, thank you.